Today on Black Twitter Talk, we are talking the Nate Parker rape case, the Department of Justice cancels contracts with private prisons, Ryan Lochte, the Olympic liar, Frank Ocean drops his new album, and we answer viewer questions about what it means to be black. Stay tuned. My jam.
My song.
Paris Martin with you. He's a kid from South LA. I love him. He works with Kendrick Lamar.
This is going to be my first dance at my wedding, y'all.
Hey. Thanks for tuning in to Black Twitter Talk. I am your host, Angie Skates. You can find me on Twitter at Angie_Skates.
Hey, what's up, you guys? It's Kels. You can find me on Instagram and on Twitter at The Urban Gypsy LA.
All right, you guys, this is my jam, but let's get into it.
Okay.
I know we have all heard about Nate Parker's rape case from 17 years ago. Okay, so he produced, directed, wrote, and stars in The Birth of a Nation, which is a film that chronicles the life of Nat Turner and the rebellion that he led in 1831 in Virginia.
Which did really good at the film festivals, right?
Yeah, it was purchased by Fox Searchlight for an unheard of price. They'd even beat out Little Miss Sunshine, which I think was the record-holding film. So it did really well. But we are starting to hear rumors, or we are like dissecting his past because he's catapulted himself into the A-list category, and there are allegations of rape that are ugly. They are just not good. So let me lay out the facts for you.
Yeah, okay, let's do that.
So it happened in 1999 while he was a sophomore in college at Penn State. He was there on a wrestling scholarship. His roommate, also there on a wrestling scholarship, who co-wrote the film Birth of a Nation, Jean Migiani Celestin, was also accused of raping this woman. Apparently, they were out drinking, and they, of course, Nate and Jean say that the sex was consensual, but she's saying that she was raped. The victim was harassed on campus after the incident happened by both gentlemen, she said. Gentlemen. They're, I don't know if they're gentlemen, but whatever. And she said that she was also harassed by their supporters. She ended up dropping out of school. She attempted suicide twice. She ended up killing herself in 2012, leaving a son behind. Celestin, the roommate, the co-writer, was convicted, and he served 6 months in jail. But the conviction was overturned. He appealed, and it was overturned because she didn't want to retestify, which is understandable. And Nate Parker was acquitted on a shitty technicality because he had had prior sexual relations with this woman.
Okay, so that's a lot of detail.
Okay,
and that's a heavy case. But what does that have to do with Birth of a Nation? And I don't like discussing this because I know.
So
rape is like a very sensitive, controversial topic, but I'm just trying to understand, like, how does that affect this movie that is supposedly brilliant?
So are you able to separate the art from the artist? Is that what you're saying?
At times, I have in the past, not for every artist, but some things I do, and I guess it depends on my personal experience when I'm able to do that. I can't lie, but I just don't know. You know, like, he was acquitted, right?
Okay, so was George Zimmerman. He was acquitted of the murder of Trayvon Martin, but we all know he did it.
But do we know that he did it? They said that Nate had consensual sex with the girl.
Prior to, in a different time, he's known to have had a sexual relationship with this woman, not in that particular incident.
So why now? Why is it coming up now?
Well, first of all, it happened 17 years ago, and apparently this knowledge was common knowledge. It's been up on Wikipedia for years, and it came to light when he did Beyond the Lights film in 2014. But that wasn't as big of a film for him, and I believe that Birth of a Nation kind of catapulted him into the limelight. He's an A-list celebrity now, so of course his past is being scrutinized. And my thing is, black men on Twitter specifically are saying, because men like Roman Polanski and Woody Allen have been, you know, associated with rape. And there's a whole slew of other men in the industry that are associated or have allegations of rape circling them, and they're still able to create this black man. These black men should be able to get away with rape or still be able to create.
Well, I definitely don't think they should be able to get away with rape. I know that I didn't hear all the details right out, so I did have to do some, I did do some research, and I saw that the woman, I don't know what I thought her race was. I don't know that it even mattered, but I did find out that it was white, and I know we have historical issues with white women having issues with black men and black masculinity and saying that they've raped them when they haven't, and I know that was one of the arguments that Charlamagne had made. Radio host Charlamagne was saying that, you know, this woman may have been lying on him.
Yeah, I've heard that conspiracy theory that, you know, it's a conspiracy that they don't want this movie to come out. And I'm like, who is they? And what is the conspiracy? This happened 17 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know that he was going to make this film and sell it for $17.5 million. What is the conspiracy? The white men that bought the movie from Nate Parker. Like, they want to make it happen. $17.5 million. Like, what conspiracy is it? It is Nate Parker's decision that he made 17 years ago that he is having to talk about and mm-hmm. and explain. And he's doing a terrible job so far.
Right. I guess for me, it's really, I'm on the fence of it because there's this side of me that as a black woman, I'm trying to defend his blackness and him as a man. But then as a woman, it's like, I feel like, am I letting my sisters down by not being like, oh, this is unacceptable. I'm not going to watch this movie.
It's that intersectionality. One out of every six women have been raped or have some kind of sexual violent history. I'm sure there's like four other women out here in the studio. That means one of us have had experience with it. And I think that it is sickening for us to live in a society that says that rape culture is okay. What I see as a pattern is that men, black men specifically, are trying to insert themselves into the ideology of white male patriarchy. And that is a system that is destructive. It's a system that is violent. It's a system that is dysfunctional, and it does not work regardless of who is at the head of it. Point blank and the period.
Wow. So let's read some of these tweets. We have Myleek Teal. At my leak, she said, speaking of statistics, only 3 out of every 100 rapists will ever face a single day in prison. 60% of black girls experience sexual abuse before they turn 18. We have another, what?
I think what is most disappointing is not even what happened 17 years ago. He was a kid.
Because he was a kid.
Okay, yeah, we make mistakes and, you know, we grow and things change and, you know.
We learn from mistakes, yeah.
Absolutely. But what is kind of gross to me is the way that he's just so smug and just so self-righteous in his response.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of goes along with the tweet that I just read. It's almost like he knows that, you know, ain't nothing really gonna happen to him. He already got acquitted, so he's good.
Like,
so,
and he brought his daughter to a screening or something mm-hmm. after this had came to surface, and I just think it's gross. Like, you keep saying the fact that you're a Christian man. You keep saying the fact that you have 5 daughters and you have 4 sisters. Like, that's some sort of redemption for you. Mm-hmm. Like, that does not excuse your actions. And what I would like to see happen is you open up a dialogue about rape culture. Say, I messed up. That was 17 years ago. I effed up, but this is me today. Let's talk about it. Let's open up a discussion and mm-hmm. let's really dismantle this detrimental ideology that is so ingrained into our culture.
Right. Son of Baldwin on Twitter said, I noticed so many men get anxious and terrified once you start clearly defining consent and rape, like they have transgressions to hide. And that goes in line with what you're just saying. Like, I guess when I found out that she, I don't know, the fact that it was during college and that he was on a athletic scholarship, I've known from being in institutions and talking to different athletes that they do have a certain group of girls that they designate as low-key the women that the athletes can have. And I know that sounds crazy, but, like, the coaches know, the players know, the women know. So I guess there was this part of me that's like, well, maybe she was one of those girls. And I'm not saying that whatever happened that night was okay, but I think that's a part of where these men need to be taught this when they're young. Like, you need to know what it is, what rape is. Like, we were talking about the actual definition of rape. And it's not just you finding a woman, beating her up, and then having sex with her. Like, if she says no, or if she's so intoxicated where she can't define yes or no, then it's rape, right?
Yes. And that is, like you said, we need to have an honest conversation about consent with men, because clearly they are confused about it. And I was really rooting for Nate Parker. Remember we met him at the screening?
Yes, we
did. A couple years ago.
He was real cool.
He was like, so down to earth.
I feel like that was my friend. That's why I'm kind of like trying to find out, like, did this happen? Because he was such a nice person in person.
Yeah, it was at a screening at the Arclight in Hollywood for Spike Lee's film, Red Hook Summer. It wasn't a good film. But anyway, I love you, Spike. We showed up a little bit late to the screening, and the manager was really rude and nasty to us and wouldn't refund us our money, wouldn't allow us to view the film, and wouldn't allow us into the screening after the film was over. So we kind of just stood in protest in the lobby, and we kind of told everyone that passed by, because there were other people that were on CP time that day too, and we ended up having like a little bit of a protest in the lobby. The crowd thinned out, but I spotted Spike Lee walking down the stairs, and I walk up to him and I'm like, yo, Spike,
they won't let us in and see your movie, man.
Yeah, like, we saw the movie yesterday, we bought tickets again today, we wanted to come to the Q&A, and the manager for some reason is being really rude and disgusting to us, like, can we come in with you? And he looked me up and down. He was like, come on, sis. So we walk in, and then I see Nate Parker. He looks behind me. He's like, oh, do you guys work for the production company? And I'm like, 40 Acres and a View?
Not yet.
Like, I wish. But we ended up having like a 20-minute private conversation with Spike Lee and Nate Parker about the film, and we ended up finding out that we have mutual friends from Inglewood. Like, he seemed like a really down-to-earth dude. And I was rooting for you, but I don't think that I can separate the art from the artist in this case, unless he cops, and like, he just has to change his whole energy around this.
Yeah, I think somebody at some point does have to own up to the fact that they did rape a woman, and they need to just talk about it. Like, let's discuss it, because we can't keep doing it. Like, why are we just gonna pretend like it's not happening and sweep it under the rug? Like, y'all doing it, y'all need to make sure that these other brothers up under you don't do the same thing, and it ruins their future because you think, oh, you gotta quit it and it's done, or no one ever, you know, you never got convicted, so it's cool. No, because it's messing up your career. It messed up everything for Bill Cosby. Like, y'all need to be the ones educating the men under you. Because they're not listening to us.
Clearly. And the victim killed herself.
That's so sad.
Like, it's unfortunate. And I would like to see Nate be a little bit more open and honest about what happened. Even the language that he chooses, he says, I was acquitted. He never says that I didn't do it. He never said, I was acquitted. Right. Like, oh, so now all of a sudden we have faith in the justice system? Like,
Speaking of the justice system, the Department of Justice recently canceled their contract with the private prisons. Well, actually, I guess the contracts will officially be done in 2017.
So this is a small victory for the dismantling of the prison industrial complex.
It's big, but it's small.
So what happened was, there was like an investigation that happened, and bottom line, they found out that the private prisons were unsafe, they're more expensive, and they're ineffective than the state prisons. There are 2.2 million people incarcerated in both federal and state correctional facilities. Out of those 2.2 million, 193,000 are in federal prisons. Out of those 193,000, 22,000 of them are held in private prisons. That's 1 in 8 inmates. That's only a small dent. And if we want to reform the prison industrial complex, we have to look at the criminalization of impoverished people. We have to look at the criminalization of drug use and of mental illness, of chronic homelessness. Yes. Like, if we want to really dismantle and lessen the population that's incarcerated right now for nonviolent crimes, nonviolent offenses, then we need to start looking at these things. We also need to start changing sentencing guidelines. I think it's a big thing. People are not sentenced fairly. They're sentenced based on their color, or, you know,
or where they live,
or where their economic background. Status,
yeah. Someone was, because of them pulling the contract, I guess their stock prices went down. So Carolina Bama, also known as At Awkward Duck, She put me giggling at all the folks who made money off private prisons lose their money today because of plummeting stocks.
Sorry, not
but the
sorry.
Fact that we have people that invest in stocks for prisons is the part that's just like mind-boggling to me. Like, what in the heck? And then they're not actually good prisons. Like, the medical treatment is there not there. They said during the investigations, they found out that sometimes there was no actual medical doctor on site for that prison, that they had a LVN there, and that was it. It's like, what in the heck? You guys have how many people in this prison, and there's no doctor?
They don't care about us.
They don't do any rehabilitation. You know, we have a lot of mentally ill people in there, and they're not being taken care of.
They're
so
not
we're
getting
just
the help that they need.
At all.
So it's a waste of time and money,
and money.
I think. And I don't think that they're going to do away with private prisons altogether. What I think where the industry is shifting is that they're going to move towards immigration and customs imprisonment.
I thought they already kind of did that.
Well, like in 1990, from between the scope of 1995 and 2013, 85,000, it was 85,000 people in 1995, and it jumped to 450,000 people that were incarcerated for immigration and custom statuses. And right now, currently, they don't contract private prisons.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's where
that they're gonna start putting their funding.
Yes.
So that's what I was saying, like, although the Department of Justice is no longer funding the prisons, I feel that, I mean, there's so many shady people in this world that they're not gonna have a problem finding funding from somebody else. You got people like Donald Trump talking about build walls and do all this stuff. I'm sure he'll go ahead and invest some money too so that we can continue the systematic oppression.
There were judges that were being convicted of selling people to private prisons.
Like, I do remember reading something about that. It's people are crazy, you guys. They're low-key demonic.
It's a tough world. It's a cold world out here.
Yes.
So I want to talk about viewer questions right now.
Yes, we had a really interesting viewer question online. They She asked, give me a second.
The thing is
that we do want to have a more interactive show, so we're excited. We're glad that you guys are asking questions. You can always leave comments in the comment section, but someone did ask us, how black do you have to be considered black or African American, and what level of blackness must be reached before you're officially in, and also who sets the standard, and where is the code of ethics and manual?
First of all, I think race is a concept that is used for dividing populations based on physical attributions.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Obviously, you know, they're physical attributions based on skin tones, and what gives us our complexion is melanin. So, but inherently, we are black people. And beyond that, I think it's an attitude, it's a privilege, it's a thought process, it's our music, it's our art, it's our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we need to define for ourselves, by ourselves. Like, why are we looking to other people to define what that is?
Yeah, I mean, I guess because I'm obviously black, I never think to say, am I black enough? Like, for sure I'm black enough. You know what I'm saying? And I don't look to anybody else to identify my blackness. I'm as black as I want to be.
Period. And however collective our experience is, there is no one monolithic way of being black.
No.
And I think that we've all heard of the one drop rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe she might be speaking to how, you know, biracial people identify with being black, and sometimes they're not always embraced by the black community and they're shunned by their other half. And I think if you're biracial and you identify with being black, cool. If you're biracial and you identify with your other half, whatever that may be, cool. If you identify with both, great. Like, that's up for you to decide.
Yeah, I feel like, why would we still be following the one drop rule when all the other rules that were made back then were bullshit?
Pretty much. Amber Rose actually did an interview recently where she says that she doesn't identify with only being a black woman. And Black Twitter came for her. I think that it was misinterpreted because she is so multicultural and multi-ethnic. Like, why would she only identify with being black when she has such a rich heritage?
Right. If I could trace back all my ethnicities directly, I probably wouldn't only consider myself black. I think because of the way that I experience life in this world and the way people treat me, I have a Black experience, that will always be my main identifier. But you know, if you
only
if
in
you're
this
biracial,
country though, right. Like when you go to other countries, you're an American. We're an American. Right. We're American women. Like right. Nobody even sees us as Black. I think
and if
that's,
you don't talk, they might not even think you're American. They're probably going to think you're African.
Yeah, so I don't know.
We have a tweet from Talib Kweli. He says, I'm Black, I identify as Black, and it affects how I'm treated. If you can't respect that, you can't respect me. F you. let's read another one. Telly Time says, I'm a Black woman as far as anybody's concerned. Yes, I'm biracial, but I'm Black.
Honestly, I don't have a problem with Amber at all. Like, she is part Black, and she can claim that, and she can claim whatever else she wants to anyway. She's not really that much on my radar. I'm not checking for
no,
her.
No, she's not on mine either.
Let's talk about Ryan Lochte.
Do we have to?
Yes. I want to use these words because media has been framing him as some kid who over exaggerated his story point blank. Like, he's
wait, but how old is he?
He's like 32.
Okay, that's what I thought. I thought maybe I read it wrong.
Like 32-year-old kid. Like,
and he's a kid.
He's a kid. Tell that to Tamir Rice, 12 years old, who was gunned down in the park.
Because he was a threat.
Okay, so Ryan Lochte, he's a liar. I'm just going to say that. And the media will not say that. Al Roker kind of touched on it a little bit. And I'm with you all the way, Al. But Ryan Lochte, here's the situation around it. In Brazil, he's a swimmer, an Olympic medalist winner. And him and his boys were at like a gas station or something. And they wanted to use the restroom, but the door was locked. So you would think the appropriate response would be to go get a key and unlock the door, right?
Yes.
Yeah. No, these fools rip the door down, they piss on the floor, they knock over signs, and then they make up a whole story about being robbed.
That's disgusting. Because you're in a completely different country, you're disrespecting it, and I feel like because we know where they are, like, it's not a lush place. So the fact that you're, like, just being so rude and disrespectful to that property is like you just have no respect for them, for their place,
especially since you're representing America.
Yeah, I feel like something like that, like the way that they got at Gabby for not having her hand over heart, to me that's something that you should get your medal taken away from because you did not represent as well.
The Olympic Committee tweeted, he's just a kid having fun. Like, I mean, Black people never get to be children and white people never have to grow up, apparently.
So Ferrari Shepherd
preed girl. Is that a new social media
words I put together? He tweeted,
posted, and tweeted.
Okay, maybe.
But where did the R come from? I don't know.
Watching Western media use every term possible to minimize Ryan Lochte's lies. This is how history is written. And that's real talk. Like, the reason why history is not correct is because they just be lying about what's really going on, who did what, how it happened. They make it look sound all good.
And social media is not having it. Like I said, the one of my favorite things about Black Twitter or Twitter, we just happen to be Black, is the right. fact that we get to control our narrative. We take ownership of it, and we say, no, Ryan Lochte, you are not a kid. You're a 32-year-old grown-ass man who lied about being robbed. You need to take responsibility for your actions. I don't want to see you crying on my TV screen no more. I wish you would go away.
Seriously, because we know, we just talked about the prison industrial complex, and we know, understand the pipeline to prison situation. Like, they literally will give kids who are minors by definition of law full adult sentencing for doing minor adult things because they're Black.
But he gets off,
and the reason is because he's a kid. Now, if you give him off because, oh, he drank too much, or, you know, he just act, but because
he's a kid. Well, I'm a kid too, then.
We all kids. Let's go act the fool.
Okay. No. One thing I'm really excited about that happened over this weekend is Frank Ocean, baby.
Y'all, I'm so glad because she was sweating bullets on that last episode talking about it. Like, all of y'all who've been pressed about this album, finally y'all got it.
You get two. You got two projects.
Wait, he had two albums?
Okay, Endless. Okay, Endless. He called it a visual album, which it really, to me, wasn't a visual album. It was just him in a warehouse building a staircase to heaven while he listens to music that he created through speakers, so we really don't get to sonically feel it. I like to feel my music, Frank. That was interesting. It made me ask a lot of questions. I really didn't understand what you were doing, but that's one of the things that I like about you. You're avant-garde in your craft, and you take risk and you do things that people haven't done before. But I wasn't satisfied with that endless project.
I'm not satisfied with that because I don't, that's not what I'm here for. I'm not here for that, Frank. I'm sorry. I'm here for the full album. I don't even really like singles. I like a full album project. I come from the CD era, so I like to open up the book, look at the artwork, look at the lyrics, sing along with you. So that stuff was just irritating to me. I didn't have time for it.
Okay, so then he got something for you, boo. Chill. Okay, he dropped Blonde, which I was a little confused about because the album is Blonde with an E, but the artwork art is B-O-L-N. Like, he's not, it's B-L-O-N-D D. with no E. He's not consistent in that respect. I would like to sit down with you, Frank, and talk Find to you out. About, like, what the hell is
what
going on.
What be going on in your head, bruh?
I don't even know. But did you see the visuals for the video Nike?
I didn't watch it yet.
Oh, my God.
I heard it was good. I'm going to watch it later.
It was so good. You're tripping.
I just don't like my coattail being pulled like that. Just drop it all together. We got new rules. Do it like Beyonce and Drake. And I'm dropping the visuals, but I don't have time to be like on a wild goose chase.
Okay, well, let me ask you. So he dropped the audio for Blonde. It's 17 tracks on there. Mm-hmm. Did you get into it?
Yeah, I like it. I like the album, Frank. Thank you. Finally.
Oh my God, what's your favorite track up there? Mine's, I think, right now is Pink and White Matter. Oh, Andre 3000.
I like the solo reprise. I like the regular solo, and I think I like that song right after solo too.
Andre 3000 goes in on this album, and a lot of people are saying that he's coming after Drakey Boy.
Oh, is he? Oh, because there have been rumors that Drake don't write his own stuff. Dang, I didn't even pick up on that.
Yeah, Drake has been real silent, though. I wonder if he's going to come at Andre.
And I love that Andre's on the album because people are comparing his elusiveness and Frank's elusiveness together. So it's like, it's dope that he made an appearance on the album.
Yeah, they both real weird.
Most artists are.
I like it, though. Thank you, Frank. I appreciate you. That is our show today. Short and sweet and to the point. How you like that? We love the viewer question portion of the show. Mm-hmm. If you want us to talk about something, let us know. Tweet at us, live YouTube chat us.
If you have some opinions on some things we said and you want to share us, maybe we missed something, maybe there's a different perspective, we're open. This is a platform for all of us, you guys.
And we want to share it, let us know. You can find me on Twitter at @Angie_skates.
You can find me everywhere at The Urban Gypsy LA.
And we hope to see you next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank y'all.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us @BHLonline. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram me, @KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.